This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. It's a topic that begins many conversations because it's one thing we all have in common, the weather. And this year, it's been a particularly interesting topic with a milder and drier than usual winter and temperatures that set record highs during March. And now we're heading into severe weather season. Working to track the patterns, forecast the future, and predict severe weather are meteorologists with the National Weather Service in La Crosse. The local weather forecast office serves a 28-county region of western Wisconsin, southeast Minnesota, and northeast Iowa. Dan Baumgard is the Weather Service's Science and Operations Officer, and Jeff Boyne is a Weather Service forecaster. Boyne told WPR's John Gatto that last month's unseasonable warmth resulted in a record-setting average temperature in La Crosse of more than 50 degrees. That's 15 degrees above normal for the month of March, but very much in line with other Midwestern cities.
We are running anywhere from about 10 to almost 17 degrees above normal for the month. Average temperature in Wisconsin was 45.3 degrees, which smashed the old record of 40.7 degrees back in 1910. So
5 degrees warmer than it normally would be. What were the highest temperatures?
Well, here we actually got into the 80s a couple of days as far as temperatures go. Most of the time we were in the 70s and a few 60s mixed in.
Pretty much the same as we head into parts of Minnesota and Iowa.
Yeah, pretty much of Iowa was getting in the 80s. Just recently, Iowa, the western parts and southern parts of Iowa actually got into the 90s in the early part of April. Usually you don't start seeing those temperatures until you are in the latter parts of April. The first 90-degree temperature is usually somewhere around the 26th of April in the southern parts of Iowa.
So with temperatures that warm, probably what we all noticed the most was things turned green really fast. But what do you as meteorologists, as forecasters, what do you notice?
Well, one of the things that we started noticing was the record warmth across the area quickly melted the snow. With little snow, the soils quickly warmed up. We actually had soil temperatures quickly climb from freezing clear up into about 52 degrees by the latter parts of March. The growing degree days, which start the growing season, quickly climbed. Fruit trees start to mature. They start to blossom. A lot of the other plants also start to blossom across the region. So we quickly saw vegetation flourish across the area, which a lot of the plants are either a month to almost 2 months ahead of schedule.
So when we have a couple of colder days like we've had this week now with some freeze and frost warnings around the area, those are issued not so much because those temperatures are out of the ordinary for this time of the year, but so people are paying attention to vegetation primarily?
Yeah, that's the part. We're not used to having vegetation already advanced this far early in the season. And we start the headlines a little bit sooner because to bring attention that, okay, now we're actually getting back to where we probably should be as far as temperatures are concerned. Mm-hmm. And now we're starting to see frost, which could endanger those fruit blossoms.
And that's a concern that we really need to pay attention to for many weeks yet.
Yeah, we actually could. When you get temperatures that cold, you really seriously start to hurt your fruit production.
Dan, I want to bring you into this. And the abnormally warm temperatures oftentimes will bring on earlier bouts with severe weather, but we've been spared that so far.
Yeah, we have. It doesn't mean that we'll be continue to be spared. But we've been pretty fortunate in that the jet stream has moved north of the area, which is normally the storm track. And severe weather is usually associated with major cyclones heading through the area. And we've just had a lack of those. Mm-hmm. We've had some activity to the south. There's been some weaker systems or systems that have been, may I say, cut off from the main jet stream flow that have moved to our south. And, you know, that's just kind of the way the pattern is set up right now. It's been set up for warm and drier conditions, and that's prevented a lot of the early startup for severe weather.
How do you see that changing, and when?
Yeah, that's a question we Jeff and I get a lot of times from the public overall, and you know it's very difficult for us to look beyond about 7 days. You know, it's a lot of times I tell people you got a coin in your pocket, you know, flip a coin, and that's about the skill we have out there. So if we look at it from a climatology standpoint or the statistics on when our severe weather really ramps up. It's May. We do have some severe outbreaks in April in this part of the world. But May and June are the big ones. That's really when people need to pay attention to severe weather in this area.
And so the fact that temperatures have been abnormally warm through the month of March, that in and of itself doesn't suggest that severe weather is right on the doorstep right now for this season.
Right, right. And I think it's just the lack of storms that we had in March that were significant, you know, cyclones that moved through the area that prevented us from having some severe weather. But no, it doesn't really, you know, it could, some of the vegetation can add a little bit of water vapor to the air, which makes a little bit more likely for storms. But we're starting to ramp up anyway. So, you know, a few weeks ahead of time doesn't mean that we're going to have an above normal severe weather season. That's very hard to predict right now.
Beyond severe weather, we haven't had a lot of rain either.
Right, right. And those cyclones that I talk about, those are the systems that bring us our rains in March and in April. They typically are, you know, that's our rainy season. And with the lack of snowpack that we had, as we'll talk about, you know, you combine all those together, and we're just down on our water.
And Jeff, that brings us to the whole discussion about the ongoing, continuing drought conditions and the lower rivers and everything that exists. Draw us a little bit of a map, if you would, as to where this is happening and just how significant that is.
Well, precipitation deficits in southeast Minnesota, out towards the Austin, Dodge Center areas, down towards Mason City. That area is actually seeing precipitation deficits running from about 6 to 9 inches. And a little further east, from Rochester up towards Alma Center, up into Buffalo County, precipitation deficits up in that area are running anywhere from about 4 to 7 inches below normal at this time. From the La Crosse area up into the northern parts of Wisconsin, precipitation deficits right now are running anywhere from about 2 to about 4 inches below normal.
Now, when we're talking about accumulated shortages, we're talking about over what period of time?
Much of those accumulated deficits actually developed from August 1st through November 30th of last year. Since that time period, we've actually, believe it or not, with the lack of snow being about 10 to about 30 inches below normal as far as snowfall, our precipitation actually during the winter months was near normal.
Overall, the precipitation?
Yes.
We just saw more of it as rain?
That is correct. Our average temperature for maximum temperature for the winter was ranging from about 30 to 35 degrees, which when that precipitation fell, it fell in the form of rain instead of snow.
So we haven't improved the drought condition through the winter months, but neither has it gotten any worse than really what it was heading into the winter.
That is correct. The only thing that we really have improved as far as the drought conditions are concerned was we did add moisture to the topsoils. So when farmers go to plant their crops, they will have some moisture for germination to occur. Now, the problem is if we don't continue to get that precipitation to keep those topsoils moist, there's no reserves down below the topsoils right now. That's going to be our problem.
So what does it take for us to make up for what we're missing when it comes to precipitation and improving the drought conditions?
Well, what you need is all-day rains, light rains to help the soils accumulate that water instead of running off into the streams and rivers across the area. So you need those long-duration rains over several days to build up that accumulation of elevated precipitation to help fill those soils back up with water.
Yeah, and when we talk about drought, we talk about long-term. You know, Jeff was talking about some of these deficits from August to November. You know, so these are many months. So we need to get in an above-normal rain pattern for a long period of time to make up those deficits.
We're also seeing it in the rivers.
That is correct. Right now, we're actually seeing very low flows across the rivers right now. Mississippi, Black, Trempealeau, Zumbro, we're seeing all sorts of near record low levels as far as water is concerned for this time of year. A lot of that actually has to do with the lack of snow that we actually seen. Normally, we'd see the snow melt going into the rivers for this time of year. So we see usually very elevated flows already in these rivers. By not having that snow melt and also already being dry initially, so the soils are taking in some of that water, the river levels right now, flows are actually well below normal.
A cynic would say, so what? You know, we're not having flooding. That's a good thing. But what's the implication of the lower rivers at this stage?
Well, if you already have the rivers that are low and we don't start to see the precipitation increase above normal, that can actually continue into the summer, which could affect barge traffic. They're not able to carry as much loads coming down and up the Mississippi River. Mm-hmm. As far as shipping costs goes, it causes companies to end up having to pay more because they're not able to fill the barges as much as they normally would. So that will increase not only their costs, but what will be passed along to us as consumers.
I suspect the same can be said about recreational traffic and fishing and backwaters and all of that, canoeing even, I mean, on some of the smaller mm-hmm. rivers.
That's true. We could have some rivers, as far as those who want to do canoeing, may end up running into more sandbars out there, may not be able to enjoy that part of the thing. Mm-hmm. With the shallower waters, the temperatures could rise, which could affect the fish populations out there as far as breeding goes. And
it's kind of an unknown. You guys are supposed to have these answers.
Well, yeah, you know, it seems like it's a lot like life. You know, balance is where you want to be, and you get too far on one side of it, you got problems.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. We're speaking with two meteorologists from the National Weather Service office in La Crosse. Jeff Boyne is a forecaster with the Weather Service, and Dan Bumgart is the science and operations officer here in La Crosse. Dan, let's talk about some of the severe weather that we're getting prepared for one of these days here. We are moving into the severe weather season. What does that mean?
Well, this time of year, it means that you need to be prepared. You know, one of the great things about coming in and talking to the show today is that we get a chance to tell people what we do. And the number one thing that the Weather Service is here for is to save lives, is to move people out of the way of deadly tornadoes and deadly wind storms. And this time of year, it's really starting to ramp up. So people need to take some extra time now in spring before severe weather season hits here. And really come up with some ideas on what they're going to do if severe weather threatens them in their house, what to know with our tornado warnings or severe thunderstorm warnings, how to take action, have an action plan. Some of that, we're looking at it internally in our office. Our meteorologists are preparing for it. I'm putting them through training. We have kind of a weather simulator. It's like a flight simulator. Hmm. We go through old or historical events from last year, maybe. I take them 3-4 hours we spend putting out warnings on canned radar data that is just like a pilot would do for flight simulation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the public needs to be ready to take action and have a plan.
So as you're preparing and as we think about preparing, and frankly, we don't have to think back farther than a year ago with the hailstorms in the southern part of La Crosse and the tornado that came through the southern part of La Crosse. But there's more to it. When we're talking severe weather, are we just talking about tornadoes? Are we just talking about heavy rains? I mean, there's a lot more to it than that.
Sure, there is. Severe weather we use as a kind of a generic term. You know, severe weather we consider anomalous or, you know, unusual weather that really has an impact to life. That's what we prepare for. That's where we spend most of our time. So we're looking at severe weather now as convective or thunderstorm season. And the biggest threats to the public are flooding. It gets a really underplayed, but especially flash flooding. Those are floods that happen very rapidly because of excessive rainfall from thunderstorms. And tornadoes and windstorms.
We've been spared heavy rains for a few years. Many of us will think about the 2 years in a row that we had so much flooding and those really heavy rainfalls, 17 inches, mm-hmm. as I recall, in the Winona County areas and just across the river. But Jeff just told us the rivers are low, the volumes are low. Wow, do we need to really worry about flooding?
Yeah, it's amazing how fast some of these rivers can change, and especially in our terrain area where you have some relief. You know, it's like pouring water on a table, and the water will sit there. But if you take the table and pick up one side of it, it's going to be moving, and it doesn't take very much. You know, you get up to 6 inches of water, and it starts to affect how an SUV is sitting in that water and starts to move it. So moving water is a huge threat. So especially on some of these smaller tributaries to the Mississippi, these rivers can change drastically.
Mm-hmm.
We see some of that. You know, the Black River changed in September year before last, and it was unusually responsive. And, you know, if you're a camper on the sandbar there, you have to know what's going on. You have to have a weather information source. And so we recommend, obviously, no weather radios, you know, a portable device, some way to get weather information when you're camping or when you're out on these rivers in the summer season.
What's your goal for advance notice for different types of severe weather? I mean, what can you realistically do?
Well, it's, you know, winter and summer are drastically different. In the winter time, our lead times for, we call that lead time, what you're referring to. In the winter time, we're looking at hours. We're looking at 18 to 20 hours before a winter storm affects the area.
Right, right.
When we start to look at tornadoes, that time shrinks down to minutes. You know, if we can get, you know, obviously our goal is an hour, 2 hours, but it's not realistic with our science where it is. So, you know, 10, maybe 12 minutes is an average about in the country for the Weather Service to get a warning in your hands before you have the tornado move through your area. So that doesn't leave you much time. Many of the tornadoes are just a few minutes, especially if you're at the beginning of the tornado path. So you have to have that plan. That's what I referred to earlier, is you have to have a plan of where you're going to go. You need to know that you're going to get down on the lowest level of your facility, your house, your business, get into an interior room, take shelter from that tornado or windstorm. You know, people, while tornadoes are glamorous, windstorms can produce 100-mile-an-hour winds. They're just not turning, but they can do just as much damage, especially if you're out camping, you know, fallen trees.
And flood warnings and what have you, somewhere in between. I mean, those we hear flood watches,
right,
then we hear flash flood watches.
We do have a little bit more skill in the flash flood area. And so when you're talking about water warnings, like a flash flood warning, we sometimes can get up to 2 hours of advance notice before that river really starts to roll. But I would say somewhere around 45 minutes is more of an average. You know, we're not perfect, though. There are events that we will miss, too. But our science is constantly getting better at that. So there is more time. One of the big things we're having a problem with is in our warning program is that people aren't moving when they get the warning. One of the typical things people will do is look for a secondary source. So they'll seek out a secondary source before they take action.
So we might hear about a warning, but, gee, we're really going to go outside and take a look to see if it's really here.
Right, I mean, right. Or maybe your relative calls you and says,
sure,
hey, did you hear about this tornado warning? Or on TV, you see the radar information.
Uh-huh.
You need that second – humans need that second source to take action. And so we're really trying to get people to move quickly when they hear one of these warnings. And we internally in our office are really trying to push the science on minimizing the false alarms.
Do you find that with the amount of weather information that is available to listeners and viewers these days, that people are actually saying, well, we don't need you, Mr. Forecaster. I can you know, go to my computer and pull up a radar, and I know how to read the radar as well as you do. How does that strike you, Jeff, as a professional forecaster?
Well, looking at the data, Dan does a great job training us when we're at the office of the latest science there. We go through extensive training several times through the year and actually even pick up other training throughout the entire year to keep ourselves up on top of the latest science that's out there. Just looking at a radar and looking at what it's trying to tell you, you may not be interpreting that data correctly out there as just a regular user. Even if you've got spotter training where you received it, that takes years and years of looking at that data to properly interpret it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And also you got to know what sort of weather situation you are. For example, if you're very stable in low levels, even though it might indicate a tornado, is that tornado possibly reaching the ground or not? Is it just going to stay up? You have to have that other science to look at it. You have to put all those pieces of the puzzle together in order to get the full picture.
What's the hardest severe weather to forecast, to predict?
When you start dealing with tornadoes, is the tornado actually going to be developing out there? A lot of times you'll see the rotations on the radar, but is that actual rotation of the storm reaching the ground as a tornado? That's the reason we rely on a lot of spotter reports out of us to be eyes out there to give us an idea of what the storm is looking at. We've got our theoretical things that we think the storm should be looking at or looking like, but when we get that phone call from a spotter and their description, that helps us to say, okay, now it actually looks like there's going to be a tornado now, maybe that'll push me over to issuing the tornado warning.
So that's why we often hear a tornado warning, for instance, that's being made based on radar indications versus a tornado warning that's based on actual observation. We hear those differences being distinguished oftentimes in what you're saying.
Right, right. That's our warning program tries to integrate all these different things. So we try to integrate the radar signals with what the spotters are seeing, and then what the general thunderstorm environment is like around that storm. And so we try to put all three of those together to build the picture, because our science has got about 9 steps of the tornado puzzle solved, but it's that last part where it forms the tornado that we're still lacking. And we've done numerous field experiments in meteorology, and we just can't seem to put those pieces together. They're just very small scale and detailed, and so we're working on it, but this is our current warning.
Well, and one of the other things that you're working on, a new tool for the National Weather Service here in La Crosse, is a new radar system. It took us a long time to understand that the Doppler radar was the thing, and that everybody had to have it, and wow, that made such a difference. But now there's another generation?
Right. Yeah, we're kind of adding on to what we already have. We're improving the radar. We're actually going to receive more information about what's in the air or what the particles are like that are in the air. We're going to get more of a three-dimensional look at
them. I was just going to ask, are we talking like two-dimension versus three-dimension?
Right. Yeah. That's really what the bottom line is we can look at them a little bit more. We know, for example, that small raindrops fall like spheres. But when the raindrops get larger, they start to fall more like hamburgers. Okay, so we can see those differences in those dimensions now and know where there's heavy rain, because the large drops will look like hamburgers to me. Our radar scope won't have hamburgers on it, but but these things are really going to be kind of fascinating. We don't know how valuable it'll be until we get it across the country and we start, and our science will really jump forward. That's what happened when we first got the Doppler radars. Mm-hmm. So we'll be able to tell some different things. We'll be able to tell the type of precipitation out there, snow versus rain. We'll be able to tell heavy rain-making storms versus maybe a mix of hail and rain. And one of the interesting things that's really just jumped off the map this spring with severe weather is the ability to detect tornadoes. Because we're looking at the character of what's flying through the air, when these tornadoes touch down, and as we saw this week in Dallas, they picked up trailers.
Right.
We'll be able to see the dimensions and that they're different dimensions. But what the tornado will do is pick up this debris, and it will stand out to us with this dual pole technology. And we are actually finding tornadoes that have touched down that were not reported or didn't know of in some of the areas of the country that these dual poles have gone into.
Before we run out of time, the other thing that I want to make sure that we touch on is talking about Severe Weather Week. Tell us about what's going on. It's coming up in a couple of weeks. Well, Iowa was just this week, as a matter of fact, and some of our listeners in the Iowa area might have heard some test warnings and what have you, but Wisconsin and Minnesota are still a couple of weeks off.
Right. Those weeks are April 16th through the 20th. And the tornado drill day, and if you're not familiar with tornado drill day, what we do is go through a mock tornado warning, and we set off the weather radios. And these are what the schools typically use to practice their tornado drill. It's a good day to think about what you do in your own home or your business. That is on April 19th, and that'll be at 1:45 p.m. That we issue that mock tornado warning. And sometimes even the counties, the sheriff dispatches will set off sirens within the county and test those systems. So it's really just just testing through the system and making sure all the parts and pieces are coming together so that we can all provide that service and save our lives when we need to.
The other thing that I'd like to recognize that you alluded to is that it's the radar and it's the science and the observations that you all use to predict some of these things. But there's also a network of people out there with boots on the ground is kind of the phrase these days. You've got Skywarn programs and people volunteering who are out there and law enforcement who are out there watching. There are opportunities for people to learn more about that as well. There's Skywarn training and programs like that that the Weather Service sponsors.
That's correct. We've actually got several spotter training sessions still coming up. We've already had several of them already. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, there is one here in La Crosse, April 10th at Franciscan Skemp. It starts at about 7 o'clock and typically runs till about 9 o'clock.
Yeah, and those are open to the public. And for more information, you can go to our website to see that schedule. That's at weather.gov/lacrosse to get to our website and find that schedule and come out and learn about storms, learn about positioning yourself safely for those storms. That if you want to get out and about and give us your reports, we can always use more people on the ground around those storms, and just making measurements of hail and wind and telling us what's going on from these storms so that we can kind of calibrate the radar.
And for listeners who are perhaps not quite as adventurous, wanting to get into the Skywarn program or being spotters, there is also information or links from your website, as I recall, to learn more about safety and personal safety and plans and what have you.
Right. If you go to that website, weather.gov/lacrosse, and on the left-hand side, if you just click on the preparedness link, that will give you some great ideas on how you can prepare yourself or bring some ideas to your school to ensure that your kids are safe and your family and relatives are safe.
Dan Baumgart is Science and Operations Officer with the National Weather Service in La Crosse, and Jeff Boyne is a Weather Service forecaster. They spoke with WPR's John Gatto. Links to the Weather Service office and severe weather information can be found on our website, wpr.org/lacrosse. Coming up, Wisconsin's Department of Revenue Secretary Richard Chandler talks about the tax season and projected tax income for the state. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum.